Initially, the Ponzi factor is about how I realized that in finance, when you create these synthetic instruments, whether it's a stock that a company prints, or in my case with a hedge fund, is a life settlement policy, which is essentially a life insurance policy. But when you create these synthetic derivatives or synthetic assets, they're not really backed by anything. And ultimately, to pay out somebody, you got to take out money from someone else.
It's time to stop trusting the public markets and look to history's first trillionaire on how to build real, lasting wealth. Look, over the past 14 years, we've applied these exact principles in more than 300 plus transactions. Not one single investor has lost money. That trillionaire was King Solomon. We'll be sharing his wisdom on how to build wealth in a way that's translated for the 21st century investor. My name is Blake Templeton, and this is the Solomon Investor Podcast. All right, this is a Solomon Investor Podcast. I have with me a special guest. This is Tan Liu. Now, if you guys have not heard the first episode with Tan, you've got to go back and listen to it. He's breaking down some really key things that no one breaks down. There's always an elephant left in the room. And I can promise you this, with your investments, you don't want an elephant left in the room. Tan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Tan is the author of The Ponzi Factor, and the book explains why today's non-dividend stocks meet the definition of a Ponzi scheme. Now, this is really important. It's a bold claim. He's broken down lots of pieces of the fallacies of it, lots of errors, and why it's actually not collateralized, why it's not backed by anything, and why your investments need to be backed by something. You have hard-earned money, and it needs to be collateralized. Tan's has two different undergraduate degrees in economics and finance, and a master's degree in statistics. He's worked in the finance industry 10 years, and during this time, he's worked at two different hedge funds, and had a career managing distressed assets. You know, I love people like Tan because he's been behind the curtains. He's actually seen both sides of it. He's not just hearing the rules of, you know, what a money manager might say. And typically, you know, most money managers haven't seen behind the curtains. They may be behind the curtains, but they're not looking behind the curtains. They're selling forward. So Tan, I'm so glad you're here, man. I've got lots of stuff I want to continue to just dive in on. Mm-hmm. The last episode was chock full of just some really powerful nuggets. Mm-hmm. One I want to chat with you on is, you know, I consult lots of large companies. So obviously we have three-dimensional investments in Boron Capital. We've got the Solomon investor who actually comes in and invests into real estate, typically in a fixed rate of return backed by the real estate. And then they set it and forget it, and it can compound. It's beautiful on both sides. I've had people, you know, 14 years investing with us, and you know, some of them 5 and 6 and 7 times their money. When I consult businesses, I've reviewed financials from companies that appear to be doing very well, and you know, tell my listeners how. In the market, in big business, how accounting practices can be chosen to skew the reports of the financials.
Yeah, so essentially I talk about this in chapter one of my book. In fact, this was actually the thing that really led me to see that finance is not a game where the intelligent or the lucky necessarily are successful, but the people who know how to account for profits are also very successful, in the sense that it has nothing to do with intelligence. It simply has to do with accounting tricks. Initially, the Ponzi factor is about how I realized that in finance, when you create these synthetic instruments, whether it's a stock that a company prints, or in my case with a hedge fund, is a life settlement policy, which is essentially a life insurance policy. But when you create these synthetic derivatives or synthetic assets, they're not really backed by anything. And ultimately, to pay out somebody, you got to take out money from someone else. Because if you have something tangible that you actually have an end user, somebody who buys a house actually wants to live in the house, they don't actually want more money back until maybe later on, but until they're enjoying the house. Finance, though, on the other hand, is different. You create a life insurance policy that you want to trade. Well, if you want to make a dollar, you got to take it from someone else. Same with stocks. If you want to make a dollar, you got to take it from someone else for non-dividend stocks, because if the company never pays you dividends, and you receive nothing from the company. So the accrual accounting aspect of what I described in chapter one in the hedge fund was, I worked for a fund that gave out premium finance loans. They assumed that they could essentially fund these policies that would cost, let's say, $500,000 for the first 2 years and sell it for $1 million come year two. But the problem is this: they can record profits from day one as if they're going to collect the $1 million in sales in 2 years, but from month number one up to 24. However, the problem there is, how do you know you're going to actually sell it for $1 million in 2 years? The practice is called accrual accounting. So therefore, they were actually just recording these accrual profits, phantom profits, based on assumptions that they made about how much the policy is actually worth in 2 years, rather than.
Let me ask you a question. You know, so you're telling me that they don't have to make a profit to actually report a profit?
Correct. Correct. That is exactly what I'm telling you. Yeah. They basically buy for five, assume they're going to sell for six, and start recording profits as if they're going to sell for six, but they never actually sold for six.
So I get a statement that actually shows I have more value. The company hasn't even produced revenue. Mm-hmm. It's completely speculative. Mm-hmm. And it has nothing to do with truth of actually the real tangible value of actual currency.
Yeah, because there is no value. I mean, it's a life insurance policy, right? Is there some kind of like financial speculative value underlying itself? Yeah. But you know what happens when you stop paying the premiums on a life insurance policy? Disappears, thin air, nothing. What happened when people stopped paying their mortgages? Well, there's still a house, okay? There's still a house. That didn't disappear, okay? They had some problems. Sure, the ownership may have changed a couple of times, but the house is there. When you don't pay when you can't sell your stock, what do you have? Zero. If you can't sell your house, we got a house, okay? Right. So there's a real difference there. So yeah, they were basically accruing profits that they never made, and based on speculative things. And how do they get the so-called price of $1 million, or let's just keep it simple: buy for five, sell for six. How do they know it's six? They don't know it's six. It's based on their own projections, based on their own models. The thing that makes this possible really is it has to be an esoteric asset, like a life insurance policy that no one really understands how it's traded or anything like that in the life seller market. I guarantee you most of your listeners, if not all of them, have never heard of what I just said, right? No one understands. So one, the asset has to be really exotic and in terms of no one really understands it. Two, it's also very illiquid, meaning it doesn't sell very often, so there's really no way to gauge how much is actually worth. So therefore, you can kind of get away with this accrual accounting thing that by reporting whatever the heck you want.
Which ironically, then, so it's illiquid, it's abstract, it mm-hmm. is accrual accounting, so it's speculative. It's something we're basing
future assumptions,
assumption mm-hmm. earnings, and then you can't really you can't actually take out money. You can't actually, I guess, get those funds because they're illiquid. So it's very cybery. But in the book, you share how when the company is doing this and people are buying in on the speculation, the higher the stock goes up, even though for Bob the investor, it's his money's not having any reflection or correlation okay. with the actual stock. Uh-huh. The company actually benefits. They can borrow more money against that, right?
Yeah. So two things. One, let's dissect that. One, the accrual accounting thing is different from the stock market. Right. The accrual accounting thing was specifically with this esoteric asset thing that they can speculate on. But basically, that was just show you don't have to always make money and bet the right way to show a profit, as you said. Right. Again, one of the things that makes that possible is illiquid in terms of no one actually knows how much this policy is actually worth. So you just model whatever the heck you want and just make that assumption. Now, the stock market is a little different in the sense that at least it's liquid enough and there's enough transactions going on for people to record the actual price every day. So you can't just assume something is going to be worth $20 when today it traded for 10 or something. You actually have to record the 10.
Right.
But indeed, the non-dividend stocks aspect that you just mentioned, it has nothing to do with the company in the sense that it has no monetary connection with the company. It has no legal, it has a legal connection, but not a legitimate legal connection. There's no logical connection because the company never actually pays you. This is why you have these stocks like Tesla, who has lost $6.8 billion over the past 10 years with stocks that rocketed from $20 to $800. Now, just saying a knock on Tesla, I know there's some crazy hardcore fans out there, but it's just show that the stock is not connected with the cash flow of the company. It's kind of not connected with the fundamentals of the company. And it's not just a Tesla one-off example. There's a bunch of other examples as well. Wayday, Shopify, most of them are tech stock, and also Blue and like in some other medical stocks sometimes. But the point is, you have these situations where the stock price increases many folds without any reason while the company loses tons and tons of money. Well, right. It can only happen in one scenario. If the money that people are getting from buying and selling stock never comes from the company because they're not making any money, how could they be paying them, right? It comes from other investors, which is essentially how a Ponzi scheme works. You're just shuffling money between investors.
You know, and the more you talk about this, it really breaks down the picture of what we'd call the private market versus the public market. So as a Solomon investor, you know, the whole mentality is you've got to move from the public market. You got to remove yourself. If you want to actually have tangibles, you got to go into the private market. And the public market is the central market. It's a basic bathtub with tons of things. We call them stocks. Mm-hmm. And if you actually feel like you're diversified in that big bathtub, it's just one big bathtub. It's a centralized location. And so the private market actually is where the private assets are, where it's like it's backed by collateral. It's backed by something tangible. You share in chapter 3 the idea of investing on investing versus gambling. Tell me more about that.
What I basically explained is, one, the idea behind investing and gambling has been improperly defined right now. There is no proper definitions for it. It's basically archaic definitions. When you look up gambling, it has to do with just playing a game at a casino. That's the way they describe it. When you look up investing, it's about buying an asset, buying a thing, and selling it for more. Now, the problem there is the word investing and the definition that it came from that attached to it. It was developed around the 1600s when the assets people were buying were real estate, land. It was not these imaginary Ponzi assets, non-dividend stocks that companies just print at will. So the asset they're actually talking about when the definition was made was actually tangible stuff. It was not, they did not imagine today where these imaginary assets, these Ponzi assets exist and people, they're not backed by anything. People are just trading them.
Right.
So the thing is, I point out that these definitions are archaic and a lot of times we just simply don't actually know what investing and gambling really is. How do we define it? And I proposed basically a probabilistic definition. I said, if a scenario is greater than 50-50, you have the probability of success is defined, and you know it is better than 50-50, then that is investing. Gambling, I define it as, if you know the probabilities and it is less than 50-50 or 50-50, that's gambling, or you don't know what the probability is at all, okay? And basically that's considered gambling. The problem with stocks and all that stuff, you don't know what the probability is at all. You can make guesses and stuff. Do they have models to make it look like you know the probability? Absolutely, but it's not the real probability. And what I pointed out is in casinos, if you play roulette or blackjack or any of their games, you can actually calculate the definitive probability of the ball landing on black or red. Why? Because there's only, I think, 38. Yeah, 38. So it's been a while since I looked at the wheel. 38 numbers, and you know there's two that are green and the rest are divided. So you can calculate the definitive probability there. When it comes to stocks, there is no amount of factors. You can't encompass all the factors because those factors are also disappearing, appearing, whatever it is, because it has nothing to do with those factors. It's about exchanging money between investors. So when it comes to stocks, by definition, it should be gambling, and it should be treated as gambling, more importantly. It's not just about, oh, everyone knows it's gambling. I've heard tons of people say, yeah, but everyone knows it's gambling. Everyone knows it's gambling. Well, why don't we treat it like gambling? As in, why don't we make it that the exchanges, the brokerages cannot open accounts for people who are 18, 19, and 20. Make it 21, right? Why don't we just attach the word gambling to all these investment firms and on the paper, rather than saying, someone like Rothstein Investing, right? Let's just say Rothstein Gambling, right? Oh man, or AllianceBernstein Investing, AllianceBernstein Gambling, right? So
yeah. But really, I mean, if you were actually just call it what it is, and the reason why we don't do that, right, is because we have a connotation toward gambling, and we have a connotation toward investing, and we want to tie the investing connotation on that public market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they would all be out of business if they attach the word gambling to what their with their documents.
It's true because, let's just say Jane is 71 and, Fred is 59, and they're wanting something tangible that they can count on, because the truth is they've worked their tail off their entire life. We call it the 50-50-50. It's 50 hours a week for 50 weeks a year for 50 years. And now they're coming to the point of, I got to have something. I can't work forever. I got to actually have tangible, money I can count on. It's time now that I should have a nest egg built up that's mm-hmm. actually going to produce money for me. And that's why the private market, we talk about it, is so powerful. Because when it's backed by a tangible, like real estate, and in boron capital, we do it as a 3D investment. So it's three dimensional. It's actually backed with, it's directed by God of where we go to invest in it. It's land, and it's the real estate business inside, and it cash flows. So I love in chapter three how you break down that very clear. What mm-hmm. the two differences is investing mm-hmm. in gambling and mm-hmm. and just call it what it is. I love, you guys, you got to get the book, The Ponzi Factor, because you've got to actually know what you're talking about. You can't just leave this to a money manager. You can't just put this on the back burner. You've got to know what you're investing in. You've got to mm-hmm. have direct understanding of. You don't have to go be the operator and do what we do. But you got to know where your money is. You got to have confidence. You got to have control that you've actually put it somewhere that has collateral. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I will mention that one thing with the definition that I'm glad you pointed that out is actually one of the conditions for that definition is that it doesn't involve something with collateral. That's definition. Meaning, if it does have a collateral, it basically is not a part of the gambling aspect of it. So therefore, to what you said, it needs to have collateral, right?
So. Love that. And so, and the difference, what you were saying earlier, and that difference between the public market and the private market is the public market is speculation. It's built on the emotion. It's not even tied to the companies. And then the private market, mm-hmm. there is no speculation. It is what it is. If it produces, it may not be good real estate because it's not producing, but it is the tangible real estate. And with what we do as a Solomon investor, as we come in with a mindset that, one, we don't lose money, and two, you got to calculate, and be in something that's the collateral that you're talking about. And then three, it needs the cash flow. It needs to actually produce cash, because in today's market, in the unprecedented market we're in, you've got to actually see the wheel, the velocity of the dollars got to keep turning. You got to get a quarterly return. You got to pull money off the table. You got to be touching mm-hmm. on a regular basis, and it can't mm-hmm. just be in a statement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the cash, right? There's a big difference between cash and imaginary value. Yeah,
that's what it is. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you really hit well on false dividends, buybacks in the first episode. So guys, if you guys haven't listened to the first episode, you got to go back and listen to it. Tan breaks down some really key points. No matter how long you've been in the stock market, I even have money managers come to me and say, man, what Tan's teaching is so educational for my own conscience. Like, it's really good stuff for my own conscience. I have to think through, you know, how I'm going to actually be a money manager in the stock market. So, you know, listeners, this is good stuff. This is meat. You got to chew on. You got to know your stuff. And the book is really going to help you with that. One more question I want to ask you is, I just lost. I'm Todd, and I've been, you know, in the market for 20 years, and I've seen the ups and I've seen the downs, and I've seen the market do well, and I've seen the market actually have some big hard falls, and I'll actually just use one of my investors' examples who's in real estate with us, but he had about 7 million in the market, and he was seeing, you know, a gradual, you know, rise since 2011, and he actually lost all of his actual return in this last, you know, crash in 2020. And so the rule in his head is this: I gotta keep my money in because I gotta hope it's gonna come back. I gotta, you know, it's I should probably double down and throw more money in. And but he also has this hard conviction internally, like, I can't lose anymore. I want to be able to, you know, have money that I can count on. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you run into that all the time with the situation, because obviously we just expose how it works. It's built on speculation. What would you tell Todd in that situation if he's like, but I have to have the money. This is not a game. I can't gamble. I can't play the game. But it will come back, right? It's always gonna. I can just leave it in there forever, and it's always gonna do well, right?
Look, I wouldn't tell Todd anything. my role and my own goal for the book is to explain how it works and let them make their own decisions. I simply, that he's in a rough situation. A lot of times people ask me for solutions about investing and stuff. It's like, dude, you know, I'm the doctor that told you about cancer. Now you want the cure? Okay. Right. I mean, come on, give me a break. Right. But that's a tough situation. My goal is to really explain what stocks are, how they work. Listen, for all I know, and based on what we can see and experience right now from the feds and the SEC and the fact that money's being printed and dumped into it, he may not be bad off just leaving it in there for now because the system's artificially propping it up, right? But we're not talking about basic logic or anything like that. We're talking about literally an artificial system right now, which sucks. And to be honest, when I wrote the book, I did not anticipate the so-called dirty cops coming in and doing what they're doing. But I anticipated normal stuff. But no, when dirty cops are involved, it's a little different. But at the end of the day, he should understand exactly how stocks work, that it's not backed by anything and tomorrow it could disappear. And that's just the end.
It was kind of a trick question on you. I appreciate your answer. You did well with it. But what I wanted to show my listeners is that you were truly unbiased to the market, and you're statistically showing and optometrically showing how it works, how it has fallacies, how everyone is taught, trained, educated, that it's backed by the company and that it's actually not. And so, you know, I laid that on a silver platter for you to be biased, and you weren't biased. And I love that, because you're just showing what the situation is. And so with that is, you know, guys, you've got to know the education, because when it's being presented like this as an unbiased, resolve, He's shining light on the investment world, and you've got to actually invest in investments. And then what he talks about in chapter 3 is so important, that there is a difference in the public market gambling and a private market investing, which is really, really important. And that's what we do as a Solomon investor. We help you activate your net worth, because as Tan just said, it's what we call net worthless if it's on value on a statement. It's until it's actually turned back into the actual currency that we still believe in, until it's turned back into that, you know, it's not counting for really anything. And so if you were one of those who you actually want it to count, you need it to be tied to something certain, you need some collateral, you need to be able to look at your quarterly returns and see money coming in and not losing principal, then you got to be in a three-dimensional investment. Man, I love talking to you, Tan. You're a wealth full of knowledge. You've got so much depth. You love exploiting things that aren't good, and you got nothing against the stock market. What I love about you is you got nothing against anybody. You just want justice. You just want truth.
Yeah, yeah. I will say I'm against the finance academics, because I think they're a bunch of charlatans and a-holes who shouldn't be working. But I am against them. But yeah, at the end of the day, I don't care what necessarily people do. I mean, some of my biggest fans are still options traders, and they trade derivatives, and basically, yeah, they just simply know how it works. They know it's Ponziness. They know it's going on. They know there's this thing called valuation doesn't work, and it's all coming from people exchanging money. But you know, they do what they do, right? I got nothing against that. I just want people to know the truth of how the stock market works. That's my only goal.
I love that. Guys, it's been so good. We'll have Tan on again. This is, again, episode number 2 with Tan. And so go back to episode number 1. He breaks down the definition of the Ponzi scheme. He breaks down why a non-dividend stock is that. And so you just got to know where your investments are. You got to know how much you got. You got to know where it is. You got to know how much you're making. And you got to know, is it backed by collateral? And if it's not, we would say as a Solomon investor, you got to activate it. You got to put it into something that's tangible, something that's collateralized. You got to protect it, take it away from the speculation stuff, and actually put that money to work. Tan, thank you so much for your time, my friend.
You're welcome.
It has been a joy. If they want to, if my listeners want to reach out to you, they want to get the book and educate themselves, where can they find you?
The book is available on Amazon. It's on Audible as well, the audiobook. And they could find me on theponzifactor.com. Also, as I think I mentioned to you, but I'll tell your readers as well, there's a PDF copy out there floating around. I think my Instagram page, you may even have the link. Because ultimately, like I said, I want to share the truth. As in, is the book for sale on Amazon? Yeah, because it's a distribution channel. But if people don't, you know, who don't want to spend the money, I'll give it to you for free. Just take it and share it, because ultimately that's what I care about, sharing the truth. That's it.
Love that. Love that. Tan Lu, the Ponzi Factor. Again, guys, he's got an undergraduate degree in economics and finance and a master's degree in statistics. He's unbiased in the truth and just wants you to know it. So I appreciate your time, Tan. It's been great. This is a Solomon Investor Podcast. We'll see you again.
All right, listen, I got to level with you. We've all seen the bubble burst over and over again. 1929, 1987, 2000, 2008, and now 2020. The fallacy of the stock markets continue to be exposed before our very eyes. And no matter where you're at right now, no matter where you're at in the markets, it's time to take action and escape the trap. You must activate and protect your net worth. Your net worth must cash flow, and we want to help you do that. So do this. Text the word Solomon to 31996, and you will get instant access to the step-by-step training guide every Solomon investor uses to get started. It's chock full of current wealth principles, financial facts, case studies, and the frameworks of King Solomon translated for the 21st century investor. Again, text Solomon to 31996.